Creative Talks, the ideas that inspire 11 institutions sharing a common goal for a fully European university. Creative Talks is the voice of Creative EU. It is about sharing knowledge. It is about creating potential from heritage. An alliance for positive transformation. From your university to the world, every story is inspiring. Welcome to your podcast of the moment.
This is the fifth part of the third episode of Creative Talks, the Science, Heritage and Technology Creative EU podcast. Welcome to a talk about cultural heritage in the perspective of the University of Greifswald in Germany. Each of the 11 partners of this new European university has the opportunity to present their projects, sharing experiences. Let's listen to them all. Hello and a warm welcome to everyone listening. My name is Sophie, and in this podcast episode I will talk about AI, heritage and culture with my guest Mascha Hansen. But before she introduces herself, let me tell you a little bit more about today's topic. If you have heard of Creative EU before, you know that it is a European university alliance that views cultural heritage not only as something to be preserved, but as a resource of creative potential. And as a quick reminder, cultural heritage includes all tangible and intangible elements, so things like monuments, traditions, stories, and practices that shape the history and identity of a community and are passed on to future generations. And by researching Europe's cultural heritage, we can actually develop new ideas and innovative solutions for both current and future challenges. Our goal with this is to contribute to a sustainable and balanced future for communities and the environment alike. Now, how is AI relevant for Creative EU? Well, artificial intelligence is a powerful tool that can be used for a variety of things, including research surrounding cultural heritage. And we will hear more about how that can look from today's guest, Dr. Mascha Hansen. So why don't you introduce yourself and how your work is connected to today's topic?
Hello, so I'm part of another project, an EU-funded project as well, called Interis Griffi. It's a German-Polish collaboration between two libraries especially, so the University Library of Greifswald and the Pomeranian Library at Szczecin. And we're, again, in collaboration with the Landesamt für Straßenbau, so it's a lot about road maintenance in our archival documents. So yes, I'm working in the field of cultural heritage as well, and we do a lot of digitization.
Okay. And you also recently participated in a Creative EU hackathon at our partner university in Czechia, right?
I went to the hackathon at the University of South Bohemia, so in Budějovice. We would call it Budweis, and everyone knows Budweiser. So it was a small town called Vodňany, very close to Budweis. And that, of course, makes for a nice location to have people in one place. And everyone, there were about 30 students and 12 mentors, I think. So we actually spent the week together, got to know each other, had lots of opportunities for exchange. I got to know a few of the mentors, and we could talk about similar problems because we all work in more or less similar fields, especially, of course, cultural heritage as an area, and what everyone is doing and what kind of problems they have and how they try to solve them. So the usual networking that I think is very, very useful in the field.
Maybe you can tell me a little bit more about what a hackathon is, what the goal of this one was, and how you experienced it.
So it was my first hackathon as well. So I had to explore what it is all about. And in this particular case, it was a 24-hour event, though in the end, of course, we had 3 or 4 days to prepare and get together, etc. So 6 groups in this case participated, groups of students, 4 to 6 students in each group, and 3 universities from our Creative EU members in each group. And the groups had the very broad topics of bringing AI and cultural heritage together. And of course, they had to narrow that down to specific topics.
Okay. And what kind of projects came out of it?
I will just sketch the winning product,
yes,
if I may.
Sure.
So the winner is actually focused on voices of war. So they had a look at archival material concerning soldiers in the second, I think, no, sorry, it was the First World War. And there is actually quite a lot about that online. So what they did is use AI to find the material, use data extraction to bring it into their project, and then enhance the material they found with the means of an AI voice. So actually quite a good voice read out the letters. And they extracted material from the metadata as well. So if a letter, say, mentioned a specific site, Verdun, then they would blend in pictures taken at the time, not necessarily by the soldier, of course, but pictures about the place that he mentioned, or pictures about his English family, or whatever. They had a multi-language version in the end, so it wasn't just English soldiers.
Okay.
Our own team had the idea of encountering, or maybe challenging, fake news by bringing together articles from different newspapers that they wanted to extract. So they had the first problem of trying to find newspapers. At first they wanted to use historical material, but actually a lot of this material is partly online, but the text hasn't been extracted, so it's hard to extract data from it. So what they did in the end is focus on Brexit and find different newspapers in different parts of Europe, I think. I'm not sure whether they had a US newspaper or anywhere else in the world. And bring together the information that they could find there. Of course, you know, you have 24 hours to do something.
Yeah. it's not that much time.
No.
Yeah. And was there something particular that stood out to you or that surprised you about how the teams worked together, maybe?
First of all, of course, the engagement of the students and how hard they worked for 24 hours and even beyond that when they were presenting their results and how enthusiastic everyone was. And there were actually quite a few students who had not had the experience of a hackathon or who did not know much about data science. So for them, it was quite a step and a challenge, and they actually took to it like ducks to water. So that was quite impressive.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine that. And what role exactly did AI play there?
So this is maybe among the challenges that the students faced as well. How do you bring archival material, which of course has to be correct, otherwise it wouldn't be a historical source, together with AI, which tends to invent things, as we all know. So this was the first challenge that they faced in their groups. Or maybe it wasn't the first challenge. The very first challenge was, of course, the language thing, getting together from different countries, getting together from different branches. I mean, we had students from the fields of geography, history, tourism, I think, and also data science. So how do you talk about this topic together, find the topic together? I mean, these were the first challenges. And then the next challenge was to bring in AI in a useful way. So I think a lot of them, the data science people, were really good at extracting data. I'm not sure how far AI was used in that, but of course you can use AI to program whatever with Python to extract the data, and I think that's what they did in the first step. And then, as I said, the winning group, for instance, used AI voices. I can't, out of my head, think of other examples of AI, but I'm sure it was used here and there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's like worlds colliding, humanities and data science.
Absolutely, especially as the data science people had not worked with archival material before. So for them, they know something about metadata, but finding original historical material is a challenge, of course.
It sounds like a really successful event then, also from the planning aspect of it, I guess.
I was really, really impressed by our partners from the University of South Bohemia and how engaged they were and how very much they tried to make everything run smoothly. And it actually did work smoothly, which is not, I think, often the case when you have such a lot of people trying to ask lots of questions about different things all the time. And I was really amazed by how much work they put into it and how well it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
So yes, that's something to do for Greifswald in 2027 when we have our own hackathon.
Yeah, right, we will have our own
hackathon
here. Some
expectations to live up to.
I'm very excited to see how that will go.
Yes, I am too.
Okay. Earlier you spoke a little already about the project you are working on. Maybe you can tell me a little bit more about that and what kind of AI programs you use there and how you use them.
So yes, Intel Skiffy is in the field of digitization. So we're actually using or relying on the established processes of digitization that we have at the university library. So we're scanning a lot of material from archives, and we hope to actually get more material from small museums and small heritage groups, Heimatverbände, that we have here in the area, and help them digitize their cultural heritage material, anything that's relevant, anything that stands out. And yes, we also use AI programs, but these are not necessarily the well-known ChatGPT large language models. So I, for instance, work with an OCR, automatic text recognition. So exactly, funnily enough, exactly the problem that our students had when they tried to find newspapers. Extracting the text from newspapers is really difficult because even the large language models cannot read. They can only find text. And for them, a newspaper that has four or five columns and a few pictures and some advertising here and there is completely messy. So the resulting text is a mess, basically. You can't use it for reading, and it's hard to use for data extraction because it finds the words that aren't there. It basically hallucinates. The version that I use is trained not to hallucinate, but it still has problems trying to find the layout. So AI is getting better and better at reading, in inverted commas, reading text, but it still has a lot of problems with the layout. So I'm not the only one working on text recognition.
Is there an example you can think of where AI was hallucinating something?
I was working on a specific newspaper example, and I was trying to find out whether my AI, which is not a large language model, is better or worse than, say, all the well-known ones, ChatGPT, Claude, or even our university AI. I think it's called Open University AI or something. And it wasn't any better. It really started to hallucinate articles instead of reading what's in the newspaper. And of course, that's misleading, because how are you to know, as someone who's trying to use the text, that this is not the original text? It's just something that the chatbot came up with.
Yeah, totally.
That's coming back to archival material. So yes, these are maybe the limits.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that with everything that AI can do already, that this is the limit where it doesn't really know what to do, so it just makes things up.
In my community of text readers, there is of course much speculation. How good will the large language models be in the future, and how soon will they kind of replace programs like the one I work with, which is called Transcribus? There are others like Tesseract or eScriptorium. So how soon will they be replaceable? We don't know yet. We'll find out.
Yeah, I guess. And how do you think we should deal with these limits of AI? How can we still use AI despite these limits, especially when it comes to working with historical data?
Well, yes, that's one of the big questions.
Yeah, of course. If we knew that, then we wouldn't have these problems. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still, I find it surprisingly manual to work with AI, because I actually have to do a lot of things to train the AI. And I think we need more awareness of how much training goes into working with AI. So we often just see the results and think, oh, it's brilliant. And at a first glance, it often is brilliant. And then at a second glance, you find out, well, maybe there's not exactly the text that I need or the historical accuracy. And of course, we all need training in how to use AI, every one of us, because it's not going to go away, is it? So we need to know how to prompt AI. And there's a lot you can do that I only learned recently that makes it better to, for instance, extract the text. So if I just say, well, read the text for me, then it's probably going to be a mess. But if I tell the AI, you're a historian, you are working with material from the 16th century, what you have here is this or that, then it's going to be surprisingly a lot better at reading the text. So we all need to develop these skills of prompting and maybe also get more awareness of how much programming and how much data goes into AI.
Yeah, I think at the end it comes down to knowing how to train the AI.
And maybe another key word is media literacy.
Oh, yeah.
So yes, absolutely. We need to be aware of texts that are AI generated. I think we're all familiar with the kind of pictures now and with the problems of deepfakes, etc. But we can also hallucinate historical archival material. I just spoke about the Voices of War, but a lot of the pictures that these days flood social media are generated and they're fake. And even the kind of propaganda that was out and about during the war is being picked up again. And we get historical stories that are basically made up just to fuel basically news drives, new wars, and new propaganda. That's something that media literacy, of course, is necessary to detect.
Yeah, for sure, totally. Another issue that is constantly associated with AI is the impact of AI use on the environment due to its high energy consumption, especially when it comes to large-scale data centers. How should we consider this when using AI, or how can we use AI responsibly in this context and in general, or is it even possible to use it responsibly?
Okay, that's a hard hit because I work with AI, and I know that the AI that we chose, Transcribus, is actually actively promoting the fact that their version of AI is a lot less energy consuming than all these chatbots. It doesn't mean that it doesn't use any energy. So I had a look at the Sustainable Development Goals and tried to find what they are saying about AI. And they're actually surprisingly positive about it and emphasizing that with the sustainable use of it. So with the thoughtful use of it, you don't use it for every single question that you have. You can Google that. But in general, they say AI is helpful and it's going to help us make the world a better place if we use it responsibly. Maybe that's a better word. And I do have a quote. I just have to find it, which I like. So I'm quoting from the UN Sustainable Development Goals intersection of AI. At its core, sustainability means meeting the needs of the present without compromising the needs of future generations. AI's ability to process vast amounts of data, identify patterns, and automate decision-making can dramatically increase efficiency, reduce waste, and enhance monitoring and reporting across environmental, social, and governance efforts. So for me, that means, yes, I'm trying to use it sustainably or at least responsibly, trying to make the world a better place, if you want, trying to help future generations. For instance, if we digitize material, that means less people have to come to the archive from far away, maybe less flights in that sense, because it's more available. It's open to everyone. You don't have to move to the archive to have a look at the originals, which of course also preserves the originals. So maybe, yes, that's a kind of small field in the large scale interests of the world. But for instance, if you want to counter these fake news about wars and you have the original material available to you with the help of a few clicks, then that is a moment of sustainability, because sustainability is not just energy consumption. It's more than that. It's also preserving stuff for the next generations and trying to get things together that maybe you wouldn't get together easily without AI.
Yeah, I think that's a very important perspective, because AI can also make things more accessible also in other areas like text-to-speech or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think in general, most of us don't tend to work with large amounts of data, but in the background, that data is being used for everything. So maybe that's another point of awareness rather than sustainability, but being able to use this kind of data, for instance, in the field of maritime science, this is very useful to predict climate models, etc. And we do have historical data that could be used to compare these kind of new climate models. I know that we have a lot of maps that are used to find out, well, where did rivers run before they were converted or changed direction, or you know, humans changed the directions. And we have the old maps that could show the original places where these rivers ran, where, you know, the kind of plants that grew there. So all this can be made useful if you extract the data and then use it with the help of AI or with the help of programming in general to predict contemporary models or make the environment or make environmental changes better, help the rivers recover, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's good to have like also kind of a positive look at at AI.
As these days, I think we tend to be too negative about AI because of all the fake news, the hallucinations, and of course the big tech bosses and all the things that they do or don't do that we don't want. But in general, all kinds of AI are really useful and they are used in science quite a lot. So I wouldn't condemn all of it, maybe some of it. And we all have to be aware of the limits and the fake news, etc. But it doesn't mean that AI is useless.
Yeah, I mean, at the end, it also comes down to what you use it for, I think. So using it for research is one thing, but then using it instead of Googling is something else, of course.
Yes, I mean, you have to be aware in the long run that if you ask a simple question, I mean, I've tried to switch off the AI help that Google automatically offers, and you can if you try to, but sometimes, of course, it's very helpful to have it. But these kind of things we should be aware of. Is this an easy question? Maybe also, of course, AI, having been trained on a lot of data, can then proceed to use less of it. We'll see how it develops. But right now, of course, large data centers are built using a lot of gas and fossil fuels in general, and that's a rather horrible development.
Yeah, that was another question that I had, is how do you think can AI develop even more in the future to help researching even more than it does right now? Do you see like
more on a university level of researching or in general?
Yeah, where do you see the potentials to...
I know that, I mean, I'm working in a library and libraries try to make researching more intuitive. So a lot of students I know will start with Google or Google Scholar when they try to find literature. And libraries are using so-called discovery systems. We have a discovery system at the University of Kaiserslautern in order to make it more... or make research seem more like Google research, but with the added help of being able to just click on the link and access the stuff that you find. And of course, the stuff that you find via a library is reliable, whereas the stuff that you find via Google can be any fake journal, predatory journal article, or just a simply, well, useless article because it hasn't been peer-reviewed. That kind of research background that you also need, of course, to develop the usual research skills for. I mean, AI is not going to take away the need to develop skills and knowledge in your own field. As one of my colleagues from Transcribus says, cultural heritage work is rarely about producing text alone. So when we have the OCR texts, we still have to do a lot of things with them to make them available. So we have to collect metadata, of course, but we also have to tag different keywords for the contents to be findable. So for instance, where AI would really be helpful is the so-called named entity recognition. So names that are mentioned in the text, they are in the text and you can find them, but in order to make that finding easier and to actually associate the name that is in the text with the correct person, that's typical historical work, of course, we need this so-called named entity recognition. And we need a reliable recognition of the names in the text. That's something where AI might be helpful, but you will still, of course, need a historian or an editor to actually look at what AI has found, whether it has found all the names in the text. And then I think it will be difficult to let just AI help with adding the relevant data to it. So if you have a name like Müller or a typical German name, then you will find lots and lots of people with that name. So which of them is it? Or even if you have a more unusual name. Quite often, mother and daughter or father and son had the same name. So the same first name, the same second name, you have to find out who is it. And for that, I think at present, we still need historians. But of course, AI can help with that. It can suggest people, it can find the data that is already online, especially when you're looking for someone who is less well known.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on that. Is there some kind of conclusion you want to draw, or maybe say something about how you personally view AI and its impacts, just to sum things up?
I tend to be skeptical about a lot of things, but also interested in the things that I don't yet understand. So I'm sure that science is going to use AI for good things. I also find it kind of exciting to have these, can I call it an intersection between storytelling and history with the help of AI, as the students did in the hackathon. So to make history come alive with the help of storytelling, that's something AI can do up to a certain point. Helping people access history, for instance, by using AI to read out documents, that of course is also a matter of accessibility again, making it possible for people, for instance, who can't see or can't read, to hear these texts spoken, or vice versa, to have spoken text transformed into transcriptions that you can then read. This is something that AI is helpful with. It may seem a small step, you know, we have these huge developments with AI, and I'm talking about accessibility, but this is important too.
Yeah, I think that with bringing history to life with the help of AI, there's also always the danger of portraying certain stereotypes, but I think then
Absolutely.
If you have media literacy and if you're careful about what you're having the AI portray, I think that's there's a way to work around that and to prevent that.
And of course, you can use AI to present your stuff on a website, even if you don't have the necessary knowledge to build the website. You can also use tools for that are not AI. But I think most of these tools now incorporate AI in some ways. And of course, this kind of storytelling, it doesn't mean that you have to tell a proper story. It means that you can use it to, say, present the data that we digitize. We're talking about Pomerania in my project, and we want to show people, tourists, for instance, who come to the area, what did Pomerania look like? And of course, AI can help us build a picture of what Pomerania may have looked like using accurate data, not just spinning off and inventing what Pomerania might have looked like, but using actual pictures and postcards to build a kind of general idea of what the area might have looked like 200 years ago or what people might have done at the time. So, I mean, we don't have the resources to actually do a documentary film. But of course, we could do a short film using AI that people might be interested in. And here we need historical expertise. Somebody, say our Pomerania expert, has to tell us, well, no, it can't have been like that because. And then he or she will come up with their own knowledge about the area and saying, well, no, we don't have that kind of tree here. Or, you know, this is not what people looked like. So this is a bit of a difficult area because you need the expertise to actually judge what AI has done.
Yeah, so in the end, you do still need the experts and the historians to enhance the data you already have with AI.
And of course, it would be very boring if we didn't need that expertise any longer. Then it's just, in the end, it's AI chatting to itself. So we want to be able to say, no, this is not what I personally think it might have been, or what I know about the area or the time in history. So yes, I think it's an exciting new communication partner, AI is.
Yeah, and I think also, another aspect that comes up with AI use a lot is the fear people have that AI might replace humans. But I also think that if you use, AI is supposed to be used as a tool to enhance the work that humans do, or in this case, enhance historical data, and not let AI make it up.
So far, I'm skeptical about the replacement because I see AI doing so many bullshit things that to be manually corrected in the end. So it's quite helpful. But for instance, we work a lot with metadata. I don't want to be too technical here, but metadata needs to be correct. Otherwise, it's useless. So if you let AI extract data that has explicitly been, you know, that the AI has explicitly been trained on, and is not allowed to use any other data or come up with some of its own spins, then it might be useful, but still you need humans to correct the result. So yes, it may make our work faster at some point, but right now I don't see us losing our jobs because of AI.
That's a nice optimistic view on this, I think. And I think this also brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge and your thoughts with me. And also thank you for everyone listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day. This was the fifth part of the third episode of Creative Talks, the Science, Heritage and Technology Creative EU podcast, a talk with Mascha Hansen in Germany about cultural heritage and AI. The following talk will be with the Breda University of Applied Sciences in the Netherlands. Have a nice time listening to it.